Coming up, it's all politics from NPR News.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And I want the listener to know Ken Rudin this week is wearing a very fine white shirt and a very attractive necktie. Ken, you look great for a late summer day.
Thank you. It's a clip-on.
And I think it's a little bit of a surprise to hear that you're dressed that well, but this was a week for surprises.
In what way?
Well, among other things, John Warner, after 20 minutes of preamble, suddenly told a group of reporters he was talking to one afternoon that, by the way, he thinks maybe 5,000 troops ought to come home from Iraq right away. In fact, he thinks they should come home this fall in time for Christmas.
I say to the president respectfully, pick whatever number you wish. You do not want to lose the momentum, but certainly in 160,000 plus, say 5,000, could begin to redeploy and be home to their families and loved ones no later than Christmas of this year.
Now, here's the senior-most Republican on the Senate Armed Services Committee, a man who's been Secretary of the Navy, a man who knows perfectly well what it means to Americans to hear the phrase, home in time for Christmas.
You'd mentioned the most important thing about him.
That he used to be married to Elizabeth Taylor.
Thank you very much. Well, you know what's interesting about this is that this comes at the same time the Bush administration is on this offensive in preparation for the September 15th General Petraeus report that the war is going fine and that Maliki is doing a heck of a job.
Nouri. Heck of a job, Nouri.
And they have these ads coming out, you know, supporting the president's conduct of the war. And the president spoke this week to the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Next week, he's going to talk to the American Legion, basically saying that, you know, things are going just, you know, peach and dandy.
A free Iraq is within reach.
Yes. And yet you hear you have the senior Republican, as you say. Now, John Warner may or may not, and the odds are he probably will not run for re-election next year. But he is still a major force, a respected voice on military affairs. And here he's calling for at least a partial beginning of a pullout.
But there was another surprise. You mentioned the president in Kansas City this week at the Veterans of Foreign Wars. He surprised a lot of people by pulling out a comparison between the Iraq War and a war he usually doesn't want to talk about.
I think we have some tape of the president. Here he is.
Good morning, Vietnam!
You know, President Bush doesn't usually do that.
No, but I think he went a little too far this week when he also called for the assassination of President Diem.
Yes, and maybe we'll get back to that particular historical parallel here in a moment or perhaps in a later podcast.
Maybe never.
Or possibly never. But there's also the possibility that the president, by bringing up Vietnam, is showing us that they are really reaching up to the highest shelf in search of new strategies to make people feel better about this war. The president was arguing that the consequences of Vietnam could be repeated in the Middle East. Here's a little bit of what he said.
One unmistakable legacy of Vietnam is that the price of America's withdrawal was paid by millions of innocent citizens whose agonies would add to our vocabulary new terms like boat people, re-education camps, and killing fields.
Okay, bringing out the big lumber from 1975 and the years that followed, all the terrible things that happened in Southeast Asia. And indeed, there is real fear. There is real political power in some of those memories. And I don't think that some of the Democratic candidates for president are quite willing to take some of the risks that would be associated with a complete pullout. And we heard some of that this week,
yes,
too.
But before we go to that, and I want to talk about what Hillary Clinton said at the VFW this week as well, but are we accepting the fact that there is a fair analogy between the fall, the end of Vietnam, Cambodia?
Well, many historians would dispute that.
I would dispute that, too, because I think the situation in Iraq, given the tribal, internal, religious conflicts, is far different than what happened in Vietnam at the end. I mean, talking about the bloodbath that would happen in Iraq is much different what happened in. But again, here's another other thing. Is President Bush arguing the fact that we should have stayed in Vietnam longer?
Yeah, we should still be there, actually. The truth is, everything between us and Vietnam over the last 30 years has defied the predictions of both the left and the right, the pro-war and anti-war forces of the middle 1970s. Hardly anyone could have foreseen the relationship we have with Vietnam today. President Bush has been to Hanoi himself, to be a guest of honor and to talk about trade.
And his slogan, as he said, matter of fact, when he went there, I think his exact words, I have it right here, he said, "I think we should let Saigons be Saigons," which I thought was a very moving piece of...
I think we should move on to Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton spoke to the veterans of foreign wars in Kansas City this week.
Talk about surprises.
Yes, yet another surprise on theme. Good, Ken. Let's hear what she said.
"We've begun to change tactics in Iraq and in some areas, particularly in Al Anbar province. It's working."
Okay. Now, in fairness to Hillary Clinton, she did say the war was a mistake and the war has to come to an end.
There's no military solution, ultimately.
Exactly. But the fact that she still bought in some, it almost sounded like she was embracing some of the president's rhetoric this week that some of the surge, some of the strategy was working. And not many people, let me put it another way, there were several people in the Democratic Party who felt that was a little bit much for them.
They don't want her to go that far over into the middle. They want her to stay over on the anti-war side.
Because you had said a point, Ron, you had said to me earlier that you saw numbers that show that President Bush's numbers are slowly moving up. Now, that may be among
Republicans, yes.
But, I mean, again, given the fact that there was tremendous pressure on both Republicans to stay the course, stay with President Bush through the Petraeus speech, it's just kind of interesting that when the Democrats may feel that they are on the offensive, you have a Hillary Clinton comment like that that says that things in Anbar province seem to be working.
And Barack Obama was at the same convention coming down more or less on the same foot. There is a very strong emotional pull to the argument to be made to stand by the troops. We've been seeing that in a lot of the conservative press, a lot of the conservative media. And now Freedom's Watch, a new group with a lot of money behind it, is coming out with this series of ads. Let's listen to one of their ads.
"For Congress to switch votes for political reasons while we're making progress in Iraq, to me, is unthinkable. If we surrender now, it's giving the message to terrorists that they can do what they want and get away with it. We're starting to see results. The price is being paid. Don't give up. We've already had one 9/11. We don't need another."
And, of course, this message being delivered by a woman who has lost a son in Iraq. So it has added power for that reason. But she's making the arguments that the administration has been making and possibly making them with more force.
And it's a twofold argument. It's one, again, talking to the Republicans who may be wavering, the Republican, for example, Susan Collins, Gordon Smith, Norm Coleman, John Sununu, Republican moderates, moderate conservatives, who may be second-guessing their support for the president's policy in Iraq and of course, a roll-up for re-election next year. But they're also talking to the Democrats, too, because the Democrats are obviously go into 2008 thinking that they have the argument and the issues on their side.
In the short run, they're trying to pressure these Republicans to stay with the president. But in the long run, they're setting up an argument against the Democrats in the 2008 presidential election campaign. And speaking of that latter, there are some people we have been thinking are going to get into this presidential fray, but they haven't gotten in yet, and we heard a little bit about them this week. One of them, Mike Bloomberg, who might get in as an independent. He's no longer a Democrat or a Republican, and he was interviewed this week by longtime CBS anchor and now no longer with CBS journalist Dan Rather.
"Are you running for president?"
"No."
"Are you going to run for president?"
"No."
"Any circumstances in which you would?"
"Oh, I don't know. Any. The answer, if I don't say no categorically, you'll then read something into it. The answer is no."
Ken, is the answer no?
I don't know. I'm not convinced the answer is no. It's no for 2007, just like it's who knows what it is for Fred Thompson. But for Bloomberg, doesn't have to make a decision. He could wait to see if a candidate he may not prefer to be on the Democrat or Republican side by February. He and his $500 million can decide, well, you know something, I've changed my mind. Candidates have been known to do that. Bill Clinton, we all remember in 1990, promised to serve a four-year term as governor of Arkansas.
"I swear I will not run for president until the end of my term as governor of Arkansas."
That was Mo Udall.
Thank you.
That was good.
Thank you.
That's
very good.
But thanks. So, you know, who knows what happened. So he did have another interview where he says he is not likely to run for president. But he also said what I thought was more striking, that he said that nobody's going to elect me president.
That was an interesting moment. Mike Bloomberg actually sounding almost self-critical. He said, they're not going to elect me president. I'm more impressed with this man all the time. Not only does he have the billions that he has, not only could he spend $500 million running for president if he chose to, but he actually seems to be smart enough not to do it.
So he's on your short list?
You mentioned another non-candidate, maybe a candidate. When will he say yes? You mentioned Fred Thompson. And I believe we now have another date, another target date. Maybe they are going to declare in the first week of September.
Well, the last I heard is January 20th, 2009. As he's being sworn in.
Mm-hmm. He's going to announce shortly before the inaugural ceremony
begins. Which would be the first time that happened since Fillmore, I think.
You know, I believe there are actually people who believe that is exactly what's going on in Fred Thompson's mind, that he wants to be president, he wants to have it handed to him, he wants to get the role and then have somebody hand him a script.
There are two crowds out there. There are crowds of people who support him. If you look at the numbers, he's like number one or number two, number three in all the polls. And there are people like Ken Rudin who said this is just a joke.
You want credit for being ahead on this, don't you? You were a doubter before the doubters became the majority.
But let me start again.
Everyone's doubting Fred Thompson now. People saw him go out.
The Iowa State Fair.
They went out. He went out to participate in the Iowa State Fair.
Now he didn't.
And he spent 4 hours riding around in a golf cart wearing a pair of Gucci loafers.
I mean, look, he could have done what Jesse Jackson did by milking a cow in 1987. That was a bit much. But the thought of Fred Thompson being a man of the people wearing Gucci shoes. Here's the problem with Fred Thompson. First of all, there's another conversation we should get to pretty soon, and the fact that Michigan is moving up, which means New Hampshire will be moving up its primary, which means Iowa will be moving up its caucuses. If that's the case, the Iowa caucuses could be, you know, next week for all we know. And the fact that Fred Thompson still has no troops on the ground, no organization in place there, has not spent money in Iowa, nobody hands you a presidential nomination.
I think Fred Thompson is probably going to skip Iowa. He's going to begin his campaign either in New Hampshire or possibly the week after in Michigan but let's put a big if and underline it here. Michigan has not yet decided to move up its primary.
Just
body of the legislature.
Right, the state senate.
Not the other.
Right. Mm-hmm. The state senate. Let's go a little history a little bit. Carl Levin, the senator from Michigan, has been whining about the New Hampshire primacy for decades, exactly. Mm-hmm. He said it's not fair. With Michigan, you have African Americans, you have union, you have urban areas, things like that.
You have the auto industry.
Right.
You have Carl Levin.
Right. You have Don Gagne.
So you have a lot of things in Michigan you wouldn't have in Iowa or New Hampshire. And he has a good argument. Of course he does.
Well,
the diversity of Iowa and New Hampshire is almost zero.
Right.
So it makes sense for some of these other states to get a crack at it. But in this higgly-piggly, haphazard way that we're going about this, all we're really getting is chaos because New Hampshire's going to keep moving up no matter how many times it has to do it to remain the number one primary, and Iowa is always going to move up to remain the number one event.
Every 4 years, we say we've got to alter the way we're doing this. It's not working. Do we change in 2012?
It's also a possibility that the Democratic National Committee is actually going to try to enforce some of its rules against Florida for moving up to January 29th, against Michigan if it were to, in fact, decide to move up its primary. There actually are rules that they would be violating and that would supposedly cost them delegate strength at the convention next summer.
Look, the silliness of this whole thing is that if you threaten a state by saying, we're going to take away some of your delegates at the convention.
Never going to happen.
Well, who cares who shows up at the convention anyway?
Can you imagine them disciplining Florida? Can you imagine Democrats tell Florida, you've been bad, when they're desperate to win the electoral votes of Florida?
Exactly. Are you going to punish Michigan, which could be a swing state for 2000? I mean, I don't know if it's a swing state, but I mean, Michigan seems like a dream to be now.
That's it for this week's Political Podcast.
You can, if you like, follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
I can't wait.
It took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for America. Laughing on the bus, playing games with the faces. She said the man in the gabardine suit was a spy. I said, be careful, his bow tie is real.